Welcome to the Entrepreneur Hot Seat, where I talk to entrepreneurs and business people from all walks of life and all levels of success, from millionaires to the people who are just starting out, and everyone in between. My objective is not only to learn about their businesses and goals, but about their challenges and fears as well, all with the hopes of helping them and you find a pathway to success. Hey, everybody, this is Andy, and I am really excited to be joined today by my friend Marlon Cool for this episode of the Entrepreneur Hot Seat. And Marlon is vice president at the Southern Potato Company of Manitoba, way up in Canada, frigid parts that I have never been to. Marlon and I have gotten to know each other recently through a dad's mastermind group that we've been a part of and have really bonded over a lot of things. And I've been really impressed with Marlon's story and some of the things that he's been doing with the major family potato farm that he's been helping to run up there for the last, I don't know, you'll have to tell us, Marlon. I'm sure it's been a number of years. So anyway, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks a lot for having me, Andy. I'm glad to be here with you today.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure. I'm really excited to talk to you about this because I think it's, you know, it's something different that we think about entrepreneurship. People these days are thinking about tech startups and things, but you know, you're out there doing the real deal, you know, feeding people off the land. And, you know, when I first met you through the group, I thought, oh, it's kind of cool. I don't really know a potato farmer. But then I come to find out that you're really a lot more than that because you've been, you know, really leading this organization and developing a lot of leadership techniques that have built it to where it is today. So maybe if you wouldn't mind starting by just giving us a little bit of background of how things got started with the farm and where you are today and what kind of business you're in or who you supply.
For sure. So my grandfather started our current company in 1960 together with some of his family members. And they basically started it up out of necessity. He was a farmer before that, growing all kinds of different crops as well as some, you know, livestock like hogs and cattle and things like that. But he was just to the point where he literally couldn't make any money and was wondering what's next in his life. He either needed to drastically change, you know, the farm or get out of it and do something completely different. So he had an opportunity that he saw to get into potatoes, really highly specialized business. And he was pretty visionary back in his day. So he incorporated Southern, or it was at that point called Southern Manitoba Potato Company, together with two brothers. And they ran it as a separate business on their farms. But over time, they amalgamated all three of their farms together and ended up building this thing together over the years. So that's where it got started. My my father was obviously alive at the time, but fairly young. So, you know, he's seen the business since day one, and he's been very, very actively involved in it since day one when he was a kid and throughout his entire life, just worked together with my grandfather to help build it. So that's where it started. Myself, I mean, I can't remember not really being passionate about farming. I knew as a young kid that this is what I was going to do. So, you know, I'm literally living the dream. I've always loved being out on the farm and growing crops and doing all kinds of things that farmers do. So I've been involved with it my whole life. I guess my background would be I went to university after high school, did a bunch of international traveling and some agricultural experience in Australia, things like that. Then came back and I've been back at the farm for, I guess, 17 years now, you know, nonstop, so to speak. So that's my background here.
Cool. Yeah, thanks. And the farm as it stands today, you know, how big is it compared with, you know, maybe what your grandfather started in 1960 or even what you came to when you came to start working there 17 years ago?
Yeah. So when my grandfather started up, he was around 400 acres, which is a reasonably decent sized farm at that time. But I mean, in today's standards, it'd be a very, very small farm. So, you know, in the 40s or 50s, he would have been doing that with horse. So that was a lot of work back then. Today we're farming over 6,000 acres of crops. So, you know, it's a fairly substantial farm, although not huge. There's definitely, you know, much, much bigger farms all over North America by now and all over the world, but definitely not insignificant. I guess since I've been involved, we we're about 4,000 acres. So, I mean, we've grown a fair bit. Our sales have more than doubled since I became involved. So, you know, things have changed a lot, you know, from the economics of farming. Our sales have doubled, but our costs have also more than doubled. So, you know, our margins aren't really necessarily any bigger, but it certainly takes a lot more cash flow than it used to back 15 to 20 years ago.
Yeah, cool. And I'm really glad you mentioned the cost and the margin, because I think it's so common that we hear business owners, businesses throw around big numbers about, oh, I grew my revenue 30%, 50%. We doubled revenue. And yeah, it sounds awesome. Like, oh, these guys are making a lot more money. But if your costs are growing at the same or a higher rate, then your profit margins are not getting any bigger. At least on a percentage basis than they were before. I mean, maybe on a dollar basis, they might be getting bigger. But it's not necessarily always something to celebrate that you were able to grow revenue, unless you could do it profitably, right?
No, that's exactly right. And that's something we talk a lot about in our businesses. You know, yeah, we're happy that we're able to do more business and we're able to serve more customers. And we're really happy that we can employ more people through this. But we also have to be cautious of the fact we need to manage our costs through this all, and make sure that there are positive margins all the way through so it does stay sustainable. So yeah, I totally agree with you. Growing the business is a great thing, but you have to make sure that the bottom line goes together with the top line, and you know, that the margin is there for some profitability all the way through.
Yeah, it's so important. But you know, going back to that revenue doubling over the last 17 years, what would you say are the major reasons for that? Was it, you know, more macroeconomic demand? Was it taking over other farms? Was it more, was it leadership or strategy changes? How did you end up doubling revenue?
A little bit of both. A few things would happen. Part of it is we've grown some accounts with some of our customers. So we've had customers that are asking us to do more than we used to do with them, and that's been good. Obviously, farming, you know, over 2,000 acres more than we used to, certainly going to allow for some revenue growth as well. But the other thing is that our technology improves all the time, and our farming practices always improve too. So we're able to produce more crop off an acre of land than we were able to do, you know, 15 or even 5 years ago. That number needs to get better every year. So that's certainly a part of it too, is, you know, growing the business with our customers, but also implementing, you know, new concepts and new technology on the farm that allow us to be more productive on the same land base that we have.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, you know, even in farming, or especially in farming, technology keeps changing it, allowing you to get more efficient. But why haven't you been able to outpace costs? Is it because the acquiring or developing this new technology has been so expensive? Is it people costs? Why haven't you been able to reduce the cost compared to the revenue?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, I mean, you know, one of our big costs is certainly labor. And we live in an area where we're fortunate to have a really, really good group of people to work together with. And we have fantastic employees here. But it is also a competitive labor market. So there's a lot of manufacturing and a lot of agriculture in our area. And you have to pay competitive wages. So, you know, we've definitely seen that go up a lot over the last number of years. Also, the cost of our inputs that we're using, so we need fertilizer or, you know, different types of inputs, fuel, those things go up over the years. And farming also takes a lot of capital, so an awful lot of machinery. We have expensive buildings that we need to store the potatoes in, things like that. So, I mean, the cost of all of those, the capital items, has really, really increased in the last number of years as well.
Going back to the revenue, one thing I'm curious is, you know, a lot of times when I talk with clients and people about revenue, you know, I take it back to a simple formula of revenue equaling price times volume, right? So it doesn't matter what business you're in, it's the price you're charging times the number of units that you're selling. And it could be consultative services, it could be cars, it could be potatoes. Right. And, you know, some businesses have pretty good pricing power. You know, Starbucks can go, and when they have higher costs on their coffee beans, they'll raise prices of their coffee, right? And a lot of people accept that because they're just so addicted to Starbucks, they can't they can't go anywhere else, right? But I would imagine potatoes being a pretty big commodity with a lot of competition out there, how much influence or ability do you have to raise prices, or how are prices usually set for you in your business, in your industry?
Yeah, so that's a good question. We have a couple of different sectors of the potato industry that we supply, and kind of three different things that we do. So our primary, our biggest part of that business would be the fresh potato market. So we're growing potatoes for the retail grocery stores. And that is probably our highest risk as well. So there, the price, there's really no contracted price ahead of time. You really don't have a clue when you go and start planting those potatoes what you're going to sell it for. So it just depends on supply and demand. And that's exactly where it's at. It's a very elastic market. It'll change. I've seen the price go up 50% over 2 weeks, and I've seen it drop in half in 2 weeks as well. So it's very, very responsive to the supply that's available, and that's right to North America. We ship potatoes all over North America. So for instance, if an area like Florida, where you live, Andy, they grow potatoes down there. Once they start harvesting, if their crop is good and they have a lot of potatoes, they're trying to market them as quick as they can, and the price can drop really, really quickly. Versus if they have a bad crop and there's not enough supply to keep the demand going, price can go up really quick too. So that's that part of the business. A part of it is also that we grow potatoes for a chipping potato company. So they make potato chips. Those we contract. So we know now, what our pricing will be next year. And that takes that risk out of it on that. That percentage of it. So it's nice to have a percentage of our sales that are contracted like that, just to take that risk out of it. But yeah, it's certainly one of the challenges that for the most part, we're price takers. It's really hard from a pricing perspective to differentiate in this business. Your quality can help fetch maybe a little bit of a premium. Relationships will maybe mean that we're going to be the people that buyers want to come to first. But at the end of the day, it's still a commodity. You've got to compete in the marketplace. Just the other challenge in that kind of regard is that you're right, your sales is your volume times whatever your price is. And it's one of the challenges with farming that, we're limited to growing one crop per year. So if I decided that next year I want to grow my sales by 50%, well, that means somewhere I need to grow my business. I need to go and find that much more land and that much more equipment and all those things. So it's hard to just really, really set huge goals like that and grow fast. It's more of a slow and steady pace, you would say, when it comes to growing the farm.
Yeah, that's interesting. So a lot of times prices are dictated by the market or then tied to these big contracts. So if you did actually want to grow, you'd have to figure out a way to grow volume and probably not price. And that might be acquiring more land or expanding in other ways. It's interesting. And by the way, I had no idea that potatoes were grown down here in Florida. So thanks for telling me that. I thought it was just oranges and sugar, but
potatoes too.
Potatoes too. Okay. And I also was thinking that you must have the pleasure sometimes of going to the grocery store and picking up a potato, or maybe even eating a bag of potato chips and knowing that that potato was grown on your farm. Does that happen?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things we live in the marketplace that we're in now is there's traceability. Food safety is a really important thing, and everybody in the world deserves safe food. I can go to the grocery store, and if I see our brand, our retail potatoes are marketed to a cooperative with about 10 other farms, but I can go and look at the barcode on it and identify if they're from our farm or not right away.
Nice. And then of course you want to buy those potatoes. What's the best potato chip brand?
Well, Old Dutch Foods, hands down.
Old Dutch Food?
Yeah, Old Dutch Foods, yeah. Fantastic potato chips.
I've never heard of them. Where is that? Is that only up in Canada?
They're big in Canada, yeah, really big. But they're based out of Minnesota, out of St. Paul, Minnesota.
Okay, that's where they're at. Yeah. Got it. I'm a Florida boy, so to me, Minnesota basically is Canada. But sorry for anybody.
Yeah, exactly. That's a long way from home for you.
It's a long haul, and it's very cold. So apologies to any of my any listeners up there from Minnesota. I know it's a lovely state with much bigger lakes than what we have down here in Florida. So where does the business? Well, I guess it'll start with kind of where you're focusing your attention now. So your father is still the CEO of the business, and you're helping to run things, right? Yep. So where where are you focusing attention and where are you trying to go from here with the business? What's kind of the vision?
Yeah, I mean, my brother and I kind of run the day-to-day operations together. We split off our company a year ago where our Southern Potato is basically leasing everything from a company that my father owns, so all the land and all the equipment and everything. So one of our goals is to purchase his shares in our company from him over the next number of years. So we, you know, we need to make sure that we're profitable so that we can purchase his shares and you know, he'll stay involved but start to slowly retire, I would expect. So that's part of it. But we also want to continue growing the business. I mean, we do see less and less people interested in farming every year. There's not as many guys our age or people our age that are really interested in doing this. Still certainly some, but not as many. So there will be opportunities, but it's like any industry, consolidation is huge. So I mean, people are getting out and there's less and less farmers left every year. So we do believe that there will be opportunity to grow, but we don't really want to sacrifice quality and consistency and relationships and all those really, really important things as we do that. So a big part of our focus right now is just continuing to, you know, to build our relationships with our suppliers, with our customers, but also our employees. And we put a lot of effort into employee training, trying to spend a lot of time with key employees, especially managers that are involved helping us run the day-to-day business, and making sure that they know, you know, what our vision and our values are and what our mission is, and that they can, you know, as they become more and more involved with managing daily operations, that they can, those things stay consistent. I think it's really, really important that they know their values and that those are never compromised. So it takes a long time just to, you know, work hands-on with them, spend time side-by-side doing things together, and also just sitting down and talking about all these things, teaching all the things that are so important going forward. But that's really what we're trying to focus on is growth, but not at a really rapid pace. We want to make sure that we're ready for that growth when the opportunities do come along.
Right. So it's got to be growth at a reasonable pace. And it's interesting to me that you talked about, you know, kind of generational changes and people not being as interested in farming. So I could see that there's a lot of other farms out there like yours where, you know, someone started it back in the 60s and maybe, you know, the people like your dad's age took over, but now you've got guys in their 30s and 40s in this day and age that are like, I don't really want to be a farmer. So right. They're willing to sell the farm to guys like you who are still quite happy to be in farming and see the future of it and the necessity and that it is a viable business. So that's kind of a cool perspective. You know, happy to take advantage of those situations. And then you mentioned the people, which is also an interesting part of it. And I remember when you and I talked the first time, you were telling me about some of the leadership and kind of employee and people practices and philosophies that you put in over the years, over the last 17 years, that you had taken really an interest in leadership development. And this was a little bit different than maybe what might be done on other farms. So can you talk a little bit about some of the things that you've done to make it run more like a business than say just a farm?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I took an executive management course that was specifically designed for farms that want to grow and, you know, that want to be, you know, in the business of farming, not just in the practice of growing crops. And one of the speakers there said a comment that really hit home to me, and that's get good at doing things that other people don't like doing. And I thought about that, and I thought about farms and other farmers that I interact with, and one of the common things that you'll hear about is people have trouble managing people. So as they're slowly growing their businesses, they have more employees and they really don't know how to deal with this. You know, they're used to making decisions on their own, or maybe it was just family members involved in the past. So, you know, I grew up where we always had employees around, and I was taught a lot as a kid, you know, how to work with other people and how to treat people. But I'd say a more keen interest myself in leadership development, and not just how to work with employees, but also how to grow a management team. So over the last number of years, that's really been a big focus for us. I'd say in the last 5 to 6 years, we've had some managers with us, you know, for 10 years, but that's been a huge focus. And learning how to manage managers or lead managers is very different than leading frontline employees as well. So I mean, they're all essential. We need them all. but you have to interact with them in different ways. So, you know, management have to have a bit of a bigger scope as to what's going on, or decisions in the company. We do an annual planning retreat where we'll go off site for 2.5 days, and we'll just really kind of dissect where we're at and where we want to go in the next couple of years, and then try to leave with a really specific plan of some changes that we want to implement in the current year. We set some key performance indicators that we try to update monthly if we can, or at least quarterly, and look at those together. We have weekly management meetings, so that's one of the things that we implement. We'll meet as a group for just often just half an hour and just talk about the week. So it's really just a kind of a micro level. This is what needs to happen this week. Apart from that, I'll try to meet with all of my direct reports individually once a week to specifically help them with some of their initiatives, coach them along. And things like that. So, I mean, it's just a matter of working together with people and treating them like people. You know, we have anywhere from 35 to 80 people here at any given time of the year. And we spend a lot more time with them at the certain times of the year than we do with our family members. Farming is not exactly the easiest life. There's lots of times where we're working really long days. So, you know, we spend a lot of time with these people. And yeah, we're working. We have initiatives that need to be done. But I like to keep the atmosphere fun. And I think, you know, we have a really, really good team of people here who truly do care about each other, not just as employee-employer relationship, but we care about each other as individuals too.
Yeah, that's really cool to hear that you're running it that way, and you take such an interest in taking care of your employees and developing them and having those weekly management meetings and coaching all of your direct reports, which is so many people, whether they're in big companies or small companies, just don't really understand the importance of that and really developing themselves as leaders and developing their employees and being available to not just manage them, but coach them as well, which is cool. Do you invest in different types of leadership development to help your managers improve their skills as managers? Is it mostly just through conversations with you, or do you send them to classes or anything like that?
Bit of both. You know, we've invested in some courses for some of them, and usually those are specifically on leadership. I always find that you can learn specifics of your industry from different people, but when it comes to leadership, it usually involves, or it's good to get some coaching. So a couple of our managers have taken some courses, which has been really, really beneficial. Taught them different skills as to how to deal with employees. This last year, we teamed up together with one of our suppliers that we really, you know, a key supplier. We do a lot of business together with them, and our businesses are very aligned, almost like partners. We're not financially tied together in any way, but we're really on the same page. So we teamed up together and actually hired a coach to come in and do a 6-week training seminar. So just, you know, an hour to 2 hours a week for 6 weeks. And different things like communication, conflict resolution, how to deal with problems, personality assessments, and communicating with different employees. So we did that together as a management team, and that was really, really beneficial as well. Some of the more specific things that we need for, you know, how to grow potatoes, different things like that. There's different seminars and conferences specifically for our industry. So, you know, we definitely go to those as a group as well and continue our education together. Combined with that, you know, my brother and myself have been doing this our whole life. So, I mean, we always feel we have a lot to learn. We're just really starting to get to know things. But we also have been doing this for a while. So we like to spend a lot of time hands-on with them too, and just giving them some of our experience and helping them make decisions that way too. So I guess kind of a combined level of internal and external coaching.
Right. Yeah, that's really cool. I like that one of the things you mentioned, one of the classes you mentioned was how to grow potatoes. That it's obviously very important in this industry that they know how to do that.
Yeah, it's pretty key. Yeah, for sure.
It's key.
But it's actually easier to learn that than it is to really effectively work with people in a really good way.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think it's like with any company or in any industry, it's usually easier to find and get people to go to technical training on the how to do the actual job. But then the soft skills like leadership development, management, coaching, dealing with others, interpersonal skills ends up being just as important. And a lot of times people don't invest as much time in there. That said, you know, I wouldn't mind knowing how to grow a potato, so I might have to take that class sometime.
I'll teach you.
Yeah, I got to figure out a way to get up to Manitoba so we can grow some potatoes together. I already made this joke when I met you, but you know, becoming an expert potato farmer, I just imagine you as Matt Damon in the Martian. So you know, you can survive on Mars or anywhere. Just give you a little bit of water and some manure, right? And
we're good to go.
You're good to go. Yeah, and sunlight, of course. That's awesome. So shifting gears a little bit now, we talked about kind of the vision for continuing the way where things are going and growing and developing your people. But you have a lot of people, which I'm sure comes with a lot of challenges. What are some of the big challenges that you're dealing with right now that may be causing you stress or that you have to make big decisions over with the business?
Sure. Well, you know, today we're in a good spot where we have a fantastic group of really dedicated employees, people that are willing to do the hard work and the extra hours and get the job done. But one of the things that we don't really have a lot of in our business yet is the millennial generation. We certainly have a few millennials working here, and I've really enjoyed getting to know them and working together with them. But you hear a lot of businesses concerned about how is this going to work going forward when millennials are running our businesses. So it's an area that I've tried to start educating myself in and start paying attention to, or reading books or watching different entrepreneurs that are working together with millennials. And I think it's actually a huge opportunity that we're going to have going forward. There's a lot of energy in that demographic of people, and I think that there's no reason they can't work really, really well. But the way we interact with them is going to need to be different. So we're not there yet. We just have a few of them here, and you know, the millennials that we do have working for us, if they're an indication of what that demographic is going to look like, we're going to be in pretty good shape. So I'm actually looking forward to that change.
That's interesting. By the way,
that will be a change for sure.
Yeah. Do you buy in, like, it sounds like you do, and maybe it's just me that disagrees with this, but do you buy into the kind of the hype that millennials are so much different than preceding generations and that it's like harder to get them to do work?
No, I don't. And you know, you read about different things and you say, okay, millennials want to be treated like people. They want to be given some freedom. They want to be able to be involved and be in the know of decisions that are being made. And then I'm just really thinking, how does that differ from people that would be, you know, your age or my age, Andy, and older, you know, just on the upper edge of that millennials going right up to any generation? I think that's how anybody really wants to be treated and interact with. So employees want to know that they're valued, that they're part of something bigger than just themselves.
Yep.
And they may not need to know every detail, but they certainly want to know what's important in the company, where you're at and where you're going, right? So, and then just have a voice and be able to be heard. So yeah, I agree with you. I don't think that there is a huge, you know, anything to really be scared of there.
Right.
But, you know, for a long time, there was so much chatter in the marketplace about millennials and what this place is going to look like when millennials are involved. And I really don't think that that's anything to be feared.
Yeah, I agree. And first of all, I consider myself to be a millennial. You know, at this recording, I'm 37. I was born in 1980, which I think is the, you know, some people consider to be the first year of the millennial. So I'm proud to be one of the first.
I missed it by 2 months then.
Ah, yeah. See, you could still be a millennial if you want to.
Okay. Sounds good.
It'll be easier for you to work with millennials. I think people, like you said, they want to work, they want to find fulfillment, they want to be valued, they want to know they're making a difference. And I facilitate, you know, seminars for a living, and I've been around at a lot of different companies, and I've heard a lot of people grumbling, how do we get these millennials to do work? Like, they're so, you know, they're so different from us. And, to me, this is just me, but I always think it's funny. I imagine a bunch of guys sitting around in a room in 1970 saying, oh my God, these baby boomers are nuts. They're just a bunch of hippies. They don't want to work. They just want to protest. And, you know, our economy is going to go in the toilet. And exactly. You know what? Everything worked out fine. You know, 50 years later, everything is great. So the biggest challenge I would foresee for you is just that there does seem to be a trend of people wanting to live and work more in cities. And so, you know, people moving more to Winnipeg or whatever the big, you know, biggest city is around, and not wanting to be out working on a farm, and you might have to do more to, you know, attract labor and have them be happy being out there, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, that's, you know, talking about concerns going forward in a business, that's certainly one of them. And not even just from a labor perspective, but also just from a people's knowledge or thoughts or philosophies on farming going forward too. Every generation, we get more and more removed from the farm. So, you know, if you dig back deep enough, Andy, you probably somewhere had a farmer in your ancestry, but you might be a few generations away from that, right? So, yep. You know, urbanization is normal. It's happening across the world, and people are becoming more and more removed from farms. And, you know, people's concept or thoughts on who farmers are and what they do is changing too. So I think, you know, it's certainly a concern. It's something that we need to be aware of. But there, too, also an opportunity. I think, you know, we have a good message. We want to grow safe, sustainable food. We want to take care of the environment. We want to make sure that there's enough food to feed a hungry world going forward. And yes, to be sustainable, we do need to make a profit like any other business. But so I think there's a huge opportunity to get a good positive message out there that, you know, these farms are not necessarily factory farms. Yes, they are businesses, they're corporations, and they want to be or need to be efficient in order to supply affordable food to the marketplace. But, you know, we're still a family business. We have our values that are very, very important to us. We want to do the right thing, treat people right, whether that's employees, customers, anybody, consumers. They all need to be treated like people, and they all deserve to eat every day.
Yeah, that's cool. Interesting. And like you said, not as many people with the farming or agricultural background. And you're right about me. I think that at least I know on my mom's side, we have a family tree. I've seen goes back to, there's a bunch of it in Iowa where everybody has like 10 kids on the ranch. And I've never really been to Iowa, but I imagine that the only thing that happens there is farming. So I could be wrong about that, but if you're in Iowa in the 1800s with 10 kids, you're probably farming. At least that was my assumption. I don't really know.
I would suspect you're right on that.
Sure. I don't know if it's potatoes. It's probably corn or wheat maybe, but you know, something along those lines. So that's the people side. When you think about kind of the strategy or farming or, you know, what's going on with the economy, what are some other big challenges that maybe have you worried about the future?
Yeah, I mean, there's always more and more regulation involved too, which, you know, we're okay with. I think we've embraced that. We, you know, we have pretty complex programs that we run for food safety and traceability. And, you know, certainly we want to make sure that we're on top of that and that we're leading the industry in that regard. But, you know, as these things come along, we also have to be careful because they do create costs, and often the regulatory people don't understand what we're doing either. So it's not just the consumers that are becoming more and more removed from farms, but also regulatory people as well. So it's one of the things we work hard on. And actually, you asked about my father and what he did. He spent the last probably 10 years working for an organization called Canadian Horticultural Council. And basically what it is the group that advocates with farming and they do things that negotiate with different government groups to help keep regulation strong but sustainable. So, you know, there needs to be regulation. We can't just have everybody doing whatever they want. That certainly doesn't work. But yet, we can't just let people that have no knowledge of farming whatsoever dictate how things are supposed to happen on a farm either. So it's got to be a good balance of industry, including farmers, and regulatory people as well as government involved in creating these policies and working on creating a plan that will provide safe food for all the people.
Yeah, I like that plan. I like to eat food that's safe and and nutritious, right?
All do. Absolutely.
That's good. So we need both of those things. You know, regulations can get out of control and make it too costly to farm or do other things. But I also know that business owners left unchecked sometimes will do bad things, and that's where regulations are necessary. So yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's right. And it's always, you know, in business, I like to believe it, you know, 90% of the businesses out there, they want to do the right thing. They operate with integrity and with a, you know, a high level of ethics, their moral compass pointed in the right direction, but there's always those few rogue people in any given industry.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we, we need to make sure that that's all kept in check. Absolutely.
We think about the business going forward. It sounds like a lot of opportunities to grow are going to come from acquisitions like that, that, you know, you've got regulation to deal with. You've got kind of people trends. And I love that you're kind of spending time learning about the next generation and trying to be as educated as you can be about dealing with people. Any other challenges that you're dealing with now, things that are, that have been on your mind or that you're worried about for the business?
Oh, I mean, farmers, we always worry about all kinds of things, weather, markets, you know, all these kind of things that are somewhat out of our control. So, you know, we've got to work on those and do things that we can to reduce our risks in those areas. But there's also no way to eliminate risk in that. Farming is a risky business and it always will be.
Right.
So you just have to manage your finances accordingly and just make sure that you're able to weather the storms that come through here and there. Literally, you know, can destroy your crops. So, you know, we see ups and downs in our production every year. That's normal. And we'll never get away from that. But we do work to minimize that risk for sure.
I like that you said weather the storms. I don't know if that was pun intended or not, but, or that was literal storms. Literal. I love it. Oh, farm humor. Probably say this all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
I have one more question for you because this is a family business. It's been around for a while, and it seems like you and your dad and your brother have done a pretty good job of managing, you know, kind of divvying up roles and managing who does what and taking over the business. And you've got this plan to buy your father out eventually. There's a tons of family-owned businesses out there across North America and beyond. Dealing with all kinds of different situations and generational takeovers. You know, given your experience in this, what kind of advice would you give to, say, younger entrepreneurs in a family business that have an opportunity to take over or that might be dealing with, you know, communication issues with their family about how things should be done? How do you deal with some of those challenges and work things out so that the business runs effectively?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no doubt that both challenges do come up in any business. And I think family businesses, they can even be potentially bigger challenges because we know each other. You know, my brother and I know each other extremely well. My father and myself know each other very, very well. So it's not hard to sit down and have a pretty healthy debate with them. But we need to make sure that we always keep those debates to be about the problem, not about the people involved. So, you know, we try our hardest to have healthy debate, but not take anything that says personally. And communication is just really, really important. But I think it's also important to have good, healthy relationships that exist outside of the business too. So that, you know, your relationship isn't just as a business partner, that you're still a father-son relationship or a brother relationship or brother-sister, depending on the family circumstance. So, you know, those are things that, you know, are never perfect and we're still definitely working on, but, kind of some of our strategies is just to make sure that if there are problems, talk about it. Throw your cards on the table and throw it out there. But also try to really foster good relationships that exist outside of the business and just those deep personal relationships and family that are actually so much more important than the business itself.
I love that you said that. People get so caught up in the business, they forget that they are family first, right? We are fathers,
exactly.
Brothers, husbands. And that, you know, our kids and our family are even more important than money or business, at least for guys like us. You know, some people, maybe not the case, but if they really think about it, it probably is. And so just really important to develop those relationships in both areas and be able to communicate and talk about things when they come up. So I love that. Good advice. Marlo, we got to wrap things up. I really appreciate you coming on. For anybody listening that's interested in finding out more about your company, where they can get potatoes, or just reaching out to you. How do they find you? How do they get in touch with you?
Yeah, look us up. Southernpotato.com is our website, or on social media. It'll be at Southern_potato. You'll find us there and see what's going on here in our business.
Cool. And do you mind if do you have an email address that you can give out? Anybody wants to get in touch with you?
Yeah, absolutely. It's Marlon, MARLON. At southernpotato.com, and no E on potato.
No E on potato. Okay. Despite what our former vice president might've told us a long time ago. Right. All right. Well, thanks for coming on, Marlon. I really appreciate it. This was a lot of fun, and I learned a lot about farming and leadership, and look forward to keeping in touch and talking more.
Right on. Thanks for having me, Andy. Have a great day.
All right. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Entrepreneur Hot Seat. You can find more information at entrepreneurhotseat.com or my personal website, andystorch.com. Please don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes. And if you have any questions or comments, or if you are looking for ways to take your life and business to the next level, you can send me an email to andy@andystorch.com. Take care.